Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's noon, which means we have finally reached the 10-minute warning from the start of the NCAA tournament. Grant and Danny with you, 106.7 The Fan, college basketball's postseason, ready to culminate with a tourney for a national title. And it all gets started 12:15, Minnesota and Louisville. We'll give you a preview of a couple of the big games of the next couple of hours during our show coming up. But let's get to your Beltway Blitz and start things off on the gridiron. Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch. Michael, the Redskins seem to be doing thorough research, all the information gathering they can at the quarterback position. Today they've got scouts in Missouri and Jay Gruden at West Virginia. Do you think they could go QB with one of their first two picks?
Well, not only could they go QB, I think they will go QB, and I think they could move up to go QB. I think that's certainly in the discussion here. You look at the team and you look at where they stand, they're not building for the future. You know, I'm not saying that as a negative. I'm saying they're trying to win now as they're constructing the roster. They're not building for 5 years from now. Bruce Allen has said he thinks this could be a playoff team this year, could have been a playoff team last year. You need a quarterback. Playoff teams have quarterbacks generally. So it wouldn't surprise me if they made a move to go up, try to get one, thinking that that would be a crucial piece to a playoff run this season.
How are they going to improve elsewhere? I mean, listen, the free agency market is pretty thin at a lot of spots. They don't have much room. I'm still kind of waiting for the move to add some talent. Or do they not even feel, Michael, that they need to add much talent, that they're right there?
No, I think they're waiting for guys to come open. You know, the one spot you could say they absolutely need to bring somebody in is that left guard spot. You know, Flowers is whatever Flowers is going to be. But you need to bring somebody at that left guard spot. And it was an expensive market. And this is a team that doesn't have a lot of salary cap space. You know, they made it work with Landon Collins with that structure. But a lot of these left guards that came off the market, quite frankly, Redskins couldn't afford them. They're going shopping at TJ Maxx. They're not shopping at that store. They got to find a way to get a left guard in, a veteran one who's going to be reliable at a price point that the market's just not calling for right now.
John Keim reported that the deal for Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie is 1 year, 1.03 base. No guaranteed money. Basically, it's a cap hit of like $700,000. They're paying him nothing. Could be a high upside acquisition. What'd you make of that addition in the secondary?
Anytime you add anybody at that level right there, and you know, it's all about the salary cap right now. I keep coming back to it, but for this team and their crunch and the way Alex Smith is going to be on that salary cap, the salary cap is king, and so you've got to make deals like that. I think they've been very savvy in how they've managed the cap and brought guys in this year. Obviously, I've been on the radio calling for the all-out reset, but they're not going to do that. Keeping in mind they're not going to do that, I think they've been as savvy as possible. You got to try to find some steals. You got to find some veterans who are going to come in and take those one-year prove-it deals. You got to find some guys, you know, who have washed up but have potential. Maybe you can bring them in. That's where this team is right now, and I think they've made the most of the little bit that they have.
Miguel, I'd like to have you invest in a timeshare with me in Florida, but I'll settle right now for the timeshare of the running back spot. How's it going to go with Peterson back? Guy's still kind of uncertain, Chris Thompson, and I'm sure Jay can't wait to sneak Rob Kelly in there too.
Always. And Samaje Perine will be a healthy scratch every week. You can just go ahead and pencil that one in right now too for no apparent reason. Yeah, they want guys to be the workhorse back ultimately. ACL's a tricky injury, though, particularly for a running back. Particularly because he had that setback during the recovery. I think it's unfair to expect too much from him in his first year. I think you're really going to see his most explosive running in 2020, and that leaves him in a timeshare with Adrian Peterson this year, and I think that's just fine by everybody. Everybody loved what AP brought to the table. He was a great locker room presence. I think more Adrian Peterson comes with very little downside for anybody here, and obviously Chris Thompson locking down that third down spot. He'll be there as long as Jay is, that's for sure.
Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch. Thank you, buddy.
You bet.
Remember, in 35 minutes, we're giving away Nats tickets. You can go see the team, hang out with your favorite 106.7 personalities on the fan day at the ballpark, first Saturday of the season. Let's get to college hoops. Maryland does play today. We'll get the latest on them in a moment. Troy Macker of NBC Sports Washington is with us. I want to start with Yale and LSU, the 12:40 tip about 30 minutes away. LSU doesn't have a head coach right now, and Yale all of a sudden is getting a lot of run in brackets, more so than you normally would see with a 14-3 game. Why does nobody like a Tigers team that was pretty good in the regular season?
Because they don't have a head coach, and that makes sense. Will Wade has done a great job with that team, but you know what? I like LSU because they have way too much talent to get knocked off by a Yale team that, you know, has some success, beat Baylor a couple years ago. That Baylor team did not have nearly the level of talent. You know, LSU has a lottery pick in Naz Reid, power forward, and then they also have probably an early second rounder and guard from Mount Waters. I'm on the wrong side of the public here, but I think LSU is going to advance at least two games.
Well, that affects Maryland, and that would be the second game then, if presumably Maryland gets by Belmont at that part of the bracket. Prognosis for Maryland today, losing three or four down the stretch, Penn State, Nebraska in there. Maryland fans probably aren't terribly confident, Troy.
No, not with Belmont, a darling that everyone has loved, thinking they've gotten multiple tournament wins over the last few years. They actually won their first ever tournament game under Rick Byrd. But I think, again, Maryland is too talented, and I think that, you know, if they can play a little bit of defense and keep the game in the 70s or 60s, they'll have a chance. They just cannot allow Belmont to shoot three-pointer after three-pointer and not make any buckets. That sounds a lot easier than it actually is.
What about the first game of the day, tipping off in about 5 minutes, 10-seed Minnesota? Richard Pitino, the son of Rick Pitino, coached at Louisville, who his club's taken on today for about 16 years. What do you think of the Pitino family feud here?
You know, I like that the committee does that. I like these little wrinkles, you know, Buffalo versus Arizona State, you know, Dan Hurley versus the team that he used to coach. They do this all the time. I really like Minnesota because they have a lot more talent than people think, but they're just radically inconsistent. And Richard Pitino is, you know, not the world's greatest X's and O's. But Louisville is still trying to figure out who they are under Chris Mack. I just take Louisville because, you know, as a program, they've done this before. Players have watched other players do this, and Minnesota hasn't been here in a while. Again, there's no real stats to back it up, but in the tournament, sometimes you just got to go with feeling.
Troy, I love Kentucky going deep in this tournament. I've got them playing UNC in pretty much every bracket I filled out, kind of coin toss between those two teams, especially like Kentucky was hitting it down the stretch. But my sources, a.k.a. Brendan Darr sitting 6 feet to my right, told me P.J. Washington is in a cast all of a sudden. What's going on there, and how does that affect Kentucky?
I think that's huge. P.J. Washington is, you know, one of their two best players, and he's a first-round draft prospect.
Star, yeah.
He just knows how to put the ball in the bucket when they need to. He's super athletic. He can get to the rim. He's a good rebounder. You know, he's not the world's greatest shooter, but no one on that team is other than Tyler Hero. I think this is very big. He cannot return after the first game. You know, John Calipari said that he'll just miss the first game, but he couldn't be playing coy. We have no idea at this point. So, you know, Kentucky, it could be, you know, heading home a bit earlier if they can't get P.J. Washington back, because they don't have a lot of guys who can consistently make plays in clutch minutes, and that's what he did better than anyone else on the team.
How do you like Virginia's draw in the South? Can they make up for last year? And what would they have to do to basically end the narrative that they are a tournament choke artist?
To end the narrative, it's very simple. You got to make a Final Four. The national championship is nice, but to get over the hump, you have to make a Final Four. Gonzaga did that a couple years ago to end their narrative that they could never do it. I think Virginia has a very good chance because their region is just trash. I don't like any of those teams. Purdue is not very good. Tennessee, super talented, doesn't have great outside shooting and has just looked exhausted. You know, Wisconsin could get beat by Oregon. Villanova's the sixth seed, but I don't think that Virginia has a favorable draw, but because of what happened last year, I don't know if we could just pencil them into the Final Four, but they need to if they want to remind people that they are not, you know, choking dogs in the playoffs.
Well, unfavorable draws. Virginia Tech, I think, just gets hosed here. They are a good four seed. They get Justin Robinson back, but they've got Duke looming. I just think it stinks because I think this Virginia Tech team is really good, but we might not see them past the opening weekend, Troy.
Yeah, and we may not see them past the opening game. Liberty is a very talented team, and you know, not a lot of people are picking Liberty. It all depends on Justin Robinson because, you know, Nikhil Alexander-Walker is super talented, but he needs other people to help. Kerry Blackshear Jr. has done that, but they need a third. And, yeah, it's really disappointing that they probably won't make it past the opening weekend. But when you have tape on a team, that will help in the tournament because that's kind of what makes it so unique is you don't have any time to prepare. So if you get Duke, you got a lot of tape on them.
At Troy Macher, M-A-C-H-I-R on Twitter, NBC Sports Washington's senior digital editor and a guy who knows a lot about college hoops. Troy, thank you, pal. We appreciate it. Enjoy the tourney.
Gentlemen, the same.
We are tipping off right now. We will get you up to speed on all of the day's action. Previews of the games coming up in moments live from the Sportsbook at the Hollywood Casino on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny on the Fan. The tournament is underway. We are at the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino, broadcasting live today until 2 o'clock. And then we've got a live show 2 to 6:30. Chris Russell and Craig Hoffman in for Chad Dukes. And we'll be here tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. as well. The first game has tipped off. Minnesota and Louisville are only about 2.5 minutes in right now. This is a 7-10 matchup on your bracket. Couple of the particulars here we've mentioned a couple times. Richard Pitino's the coach at Minnesota. He, of course, is the son of longtime Louisville head coach Rick Pitino, who was there from 2001 to 2017. Pitino's got the Golden Gophers in the tournament for the second time. He's been there since 2013. They were the 5 seed in 2017 and lost to Middle Tennessee, a 12 seed at the time. For Louisville, this is Chris Mack's first chance coaching this team in the tournament. They went 20-13, 10-8 in the conference. Not a great year in his first season there, but they did beat tournament teams 5 times. Mack has won 11 games as a head coach in the tourney, was great at Xavier for a long time. Louisville has Jordan Nwora, who I know you like, 17 points and 8 rebounds a night. Gophers led
player.
By a guy to keep an eye on, Amir Coffey, who averages 16 a game.
Amir Coffey and Jordan Murphy, two best players for Minnesota. They're not a great X's and O's type team. They underachieve an awful lot, but they're talented. I like this group. I wouldn't say an awful lot, but I like them. They should have been better than they are. I picked them to win in the majority of the brackets I filled out, but Chris Mack's the better coach. Nwora's probably the best player in the game. So, you know, you would think that gives Louisville as good a shot as well. But both these teams defend pretty decently, and I think it's going to be a low-scoring, ugly kind of game here.
We'll let you know as somebody pulls away in any of the games in the early going here. Next tip-off is 20 minutes away, 12:40, Yale and LSU in that matchup, and that's a game we were just talking to Troy Macher about. You know, LSU, the 3 seed, Yale is the 14 seed. What are the Tigers going to do without Will Wade, their head coach? They were 26-6 this year. He declined to cooperate in an investigation, so he's no longer on their sideline and on their bench. The Tigers won the SEC title in the regular season. They got beat by Florida in the conference tournament. But if you look back at the regular part of their year, they beat Mississippi State in this tournament, a strong team at one point. They also back-to-back got wins over Tennessee and Kentucky, a couple of the Blue Bloods in the SEC. So it's not like this is a talentless, rudderless group. Yale, 22-7, out of the Ivy League, one of the higher-scoring teams in the country. That matchup could be fascinating this hour as well.
I did not see much of Yale this year. They weren't on national television a heck of a lot. They weren't really around. But they've got an NBA player, according to everybody that watches them. They'll tell you that Mie Oni is an NBA-caliber guard, leads them with around 18 per game. This LSU team is mega-talented. I mean, they really are. They look the part. They look like a big-time, big-deal college basketball team, 16-2, in what was actually a pretty decent SEC. It's obviously about Naz Reid, who's a lottery pick. You heard Troy Macher with us a few moments ago say that. But what they do without their head coach, I don't know. How much does it matter? I mean, is this Luke Walton sitting in for Steve Kerr as the Warriors go 32-1 or whatever the hell they did with him a couple years ago? Or is this it's utter chaos? They have no clue how to manage, get themselves through a weekend. I don't know. I have no idea what to expect from this LSU team that's really talented.
We're going to be multitasking today on Grant and Danny. The tourney is underway. We are at the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino. A couple of other things going on in the sports world, though. One of them is that the Major League Baseball season is underway, and I bring this up only to point out the juxtaposition and the irony of basically the excitement, the giddiness, the joy for the start of the tournament, and then it just kind of happens, right? It's this game that very few people in the country actually would have cared about if it was played 24 hours ago and wasn't a tournament game. Minnesota and Louisville, yet Major League Baseball, all the money in that sport. You got Mike Trout today getting a $400 million contract. You're filling 40,000-seat stadiums. You got ballparks all over the country being flocked to on opening day. And while people were asleep the last couple of nights into the morning, the Seattle Mariners have topped the Oakland Athletics in a couple of games in Japan to begin the year. No one even knew that they happened.
Yeah, now I know they did this move special for Ichiro, and he's retired now after the second game.
I know this sounds disrespectful, but what a dumb reason to start the season in Japan.
Stop doing this.
So that Ichiro could say goodbye and retire in Japan? Prioritize things better. You sent two teams to Japan for two games. You opened the Major League Baseball season with a false start that nobody even paid attention to. For what reason? Grow the game globally so that Ichiro could play in front of his fans in Japan?
I'm with you.
That's a bad reason.
I'm with you. Again, you need eyeballs. You need to be cool. That's not cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's the sport doesn't market itself very well, has it for some time. They're trying to take a page out of the NBA's book. The NFL wants a team in London or Mexico or whatever. They're in a position to do that. You look at the NBA, again, the global reach of the game. They play exhibition games abroad. They'll send a team to China to do something. Major League Baseball is trying to do the same kind of things. The game is already global, right? People play baseball. Baseball's global. You need to showcase what your sport has to offer the right way. 5 o'clock in the morning games, not the right way to do it. I'm sorry. It just isn't.
Some of the specifics, speaking of the Trout
and
contract.
So disrespect to Ichiro, by the way.
Yeah, I agree with you. Some of the specifics on the Trout contract have come out now. I saw in his update earlier, Pete was breaking down some of the details. So the contract is indeed worth more than $430 million, as Jeff Passan originally reported on Tuesday. 30% larger than the 13-year, $330 million deal for Bryce Harper that he got going back to March 2nd. So his record stood for about 19 days. Here's what I care about in this contract. Number one, it is another sign that at the highest end of player deals, the best players in the sport are still getting paid bank.
Yep.
This is a healthy sport. We keep acting like baseball is going to go away in 2 weeks if we don't shorten the games, if we don't take 2 hour and 49-minute game times and make them 2 hours and 27 minutes, that, you know, we need to attract more people. And all of these things can be true. Baseball's doing okay. Nolan Arenado, who a lot of people in the East Coast don't even know, just got $260 million. Mike Trout, $430 million guaranteed. Bryce Harper, $330 million. Manny Machado, $300 million. Now, it's different sports, different contracts, but in football, a huge, massive deal is when someone gets guaranteed $50 or $60 million. And those guys are probably a quarterback. The sport is just fine. By the way, Mike Trout worked into the deal that he gets a suite for his family, you know, four basically the equivalent of the Diamond Club seats behind home plate to any game that they want. He also gets suites on the road, hotels, so he can pick the best room basically in the hotel. It reminds me of a scene in Little Big League. Have you ever seen that movie?
Which one? Is that the one where the kid becomes the manager?
Yeah. Kid owns the team, names himself the manager.
Yes, I have seen
Billy Haywood of the Minnesota Twins.
Gary Busey's a very intimidating pitcher.
He's talking about he's a very intimidating pitcher.
Chet. Let me tell you something. I was taking shrapnel. No, different guy.
It's not Chet Steadman. That's Rookie of the Year.
Maybe that's where Busey's
yeah,
the pitcher.
Yeah, that's Gary
Busey.
I'm
conflating my movies. Yeah,
but there was a very important veteran named Lou Collins in that movie who was a corner infielder.
There's a first baseman who was also on the show 30-something.
That's Lou Collins.
That's
the
Lou
redhead.
Collins. Sweet
Ginger?
Left-handed swinger?
Yeah.
That's my guy.
Very nice left-handed
swing.
Thank you very much. Home run got robbed by Ken Griffey Jr. in the final scene. Is that the one you're thinking of?
I'm conflating my little kid plays Major League Baseball something movie.
The whole
please.
Point, though?
Please.
Was that – I don't even remember what we were talking about.
I ruined it for you. I'm sorry.
I think the point was
I was trying to participate.
Oh, there's a scene in that movie when your boy is trying to make a trade, and he goes, yeah, I'm trying to trade for Ricky Henderson. And we got to get him a new dog and two like cars. He's naming all this stuff. That's the Mike Trout negotiation. It's like, I want a football helmet full of cottage cheese, like in the movie Airheads.
Yeah.
And I want to never eat any types of M&Ms again other than the red ones. And they're like, yeah, cool. We'll do the deal.
What else can we do for you? roll out the red carpet times 1,000. But it's the right way to go about it. It's that, you know, that's it's on a hometown discount because obviously he's getting an absurd amount of money, the richest contract in North American pro sports history. But it's also that you know the way the ins and outs work. Whereas if you're negotiating starting tomorrow with the Cubs or negotiating with somebody else, you don't know about the hotel policies of the team, where you don't know, you know, what the best seat in the house is, et cetera. He does know that because he's been there.
Let's get into this next. What kind of NBA player is Zion Williamson going to be? And what do you guys make of the Duke superstar? A lot of folks early in the season said his game wouldn't translate to the association. Some of those detractors are fewer and far between right now, but he is, as far as size goes, a little bit of a tweener. He's a big boy. He can step outside. He can shoot it a little bit. He can certainly dribble. He's athletic. But he's not quite 6'8". What kind of player is he going to be at the next level? He is going to be the star of this tournament for Duke. We're Grant and Danny live at the Sportsbook at the Hollywood Casino on The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Much appreciate you guys listening. Welcome back. Tournament's underway. Game one, nearing the midway point of the first half. Minnesota and Louisville separated by just a point with the Golden Gophers, the 10 seed, up 12-11 in the early going. Zion Williamson is the biggest star in this tournament. He, of course, averaging 20-plus points and close to 10 rebounds a night for Duke, has been a sensation all year long. But his star really rose to a new height in the ACC tournament. He got hurt in what was a controversial sequence because he busted right through his shoe with his foot on the floor in a highly anticipated marquee matchup with North Carolina on national television. Then he sits out the remainder of the season as he's recovering with that leg injury. In the ACC tournament, he poured in 29 points in consecutive games and then 21 as Duke pulled away with a conference championship. Danny, a lot is made, though, about him maybe not translating to the NBA all that well. I got to tell you, man, I don't see it. I think that guy is uber athletic. He can dribble. He can pass. He can shoot fine. He gets to the rim easier, it seems like, than anybody else in the country. I look at him as a guy that's tailor-made for the association, and I get that the size isn't perfect for the position, but I kind of think that the athleticism makes up for that.
Well, you know, people say he's not tall enough to be a power forward, and they must be saying it from 1996. The game has changed. And you touched on some of the things as to how it changed. First of all, he's got a 6'11 wingspan, even though he's only listed at 6'6", 6'7", 8'7 standing reach. The point is, he's got enough length and power in terms of his physicality to cover anybody, 1 through 4. He could even match up against some of the centers out there. I trust him against Karl Anthony Towns in space, for example. The foot quickness is there. What you would worry about long-term, I mean 10 years down the line, Grant, is right now he's an explosive uber athlete. Despite carrying extra pounds on his frame, that usually doesn't sustain itself over the course of years. You can get him into a professional nutrition program. You can have him cut some of that weight. But you don't want him to lose his strength, which right now is his best athlete next to his athleticism. You could, as a rookie, depends on where he goes, right, if New York gets him the number one overall pick, you could not run a single play for him at any point in time as a rookie. You shouldn't do this, by the way, if he's developing, but bear with me. You could just say, hustle. You go out there, play defense, rebound, crash the boards, get out in transition, et cetera. He'd average 17 and 12 just by doing that. His floor is as a quality NBA starter. I think his ceiling is superstar. Right.
So
now,
do you think when people knock him and they say, because you hear this like I do.
Of course.
And every time I mention this or I kind of debate it on, with someone on social media or online or what have you, what you inevitably get is people saying, no one thinks he's not going to be good. And that's just not the case. At the beginning of this season, I would say it was kind of a 50-50 split on his profile as an NBA player. Now, it has certainly changed as the year's gone on. Maybe it's now 75-25, something like that. But there are a lot of people that don't buy him. You think that's just the old guard who's still projecting based on, you know, your frame, your height, your weight?
I think that's part of it. But the other part is right now, as a 19-year-old, he's not a great shooter. He's not. He's not a great outside shooter. He hasn't had to for a second. both in high school and really at Duke. They've got guys for that. They've got Cam Reddish for that. They've got R.J. Barrett for that. His face-up game, his ability to take bigger players off the dribble, create, as you kind of alluded to, is elite in my mind. And I think he's got a nice enough touch around the rim. He'll work on that shot. He'll become an adequate, even, I wouldn't say, plus power forward type shooting guy. But he hasn't had to at this stage. And that's the thing you can work on. He will put in the hours. He will put in the effort and time to turn himself into a good enough shooter to be a superstar in this league. To me, this is as can't-miss a prospect as we have seen in some time.
You mentioned R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish, who also play at Duke, Zion Williamson's teammates. Those are three of the five best prospects in college basketball. Forget this tournament.
Yep.
I mean, in the country right now, that's three of the top five NBA projected players. If you're looking at other names in this tournament, go off the grid a little bit, non-powerhouse school, you'd go John Morant, the sophomore point guard who can fill it up.
He's a lot of fun. I hope they get by Marquette with a pile of everybody, Kyle Brostowitz and the Marquette fans. I want more people to see John Morant.
Well, I think he's
De'Aaron Fox. He's Russell Westbrook 2.0.
He could be the dude in this tournament that everybody talks about and didn't know beforehand. We had a guest. Who did we have on? Was it Rob Doster, I believe, who said he could score 50 and it wouldn't surprise him against Marquette in the first round. What? 50? I mean, this guy can flat out score the ball. He's so fast. He can get to the cup and he can shoot. Another player I think you got to keep tabs on in this tournament if they make a deep run. And finally, they've got a blue chipper, UVA. DeAndre Hunter, the sophomore small forward, 6'7", 225.
What keeps him down is their scheme, is their system. What keeps them down is they don't play with tempo. And the fact that they got other guys, Kyle Guy right now is their best offensive option coming off screens. If you let Kendall Hunter just eat, he would put up absurd numbers. That guy can play. He is the quintessential next layer or next level 3-and-D type forward. I mean, he's a 3 in the NBA, 6'7", strong enough to cover multiple positions. If you wanted to go small, he could play power forward for you. I think his game translates very well. Not a superstar to me, but just kind of what the modern NBA is, how they value the Arizas, the Porters, those kind of guys. He could be somebody like that.
I'll give you my stamp of approval guy, though, the guy I like a lot. He's now worked his way into the top 10 on all of the lists.
Is this the Jason Tatum Memorial Grant Paulson steal of approval?
Jason Tatum was a little bit higher profile than this guy. This is more, remember my Chris Dunn Providence call?
Yes.
I loved him in college. Kobe White from North Carolina.
This kid can play. He's lost
big
because the ACC was the Duke story and everybody that plays for Duke. I get it. Kobe White's a stud. He can fill it up, runs an offense pretty well. He's fast. He's like a rich man's Raymond Felton, if you kind of go back. In better shape than Felton is and was. I think that guy is a stud in waiting, especially in a league that values point guards that way. He's kind of got a little bit of that Damian Lillard hesitation, quick burst kind of game.
Wait, who?
Get out in the open court.
You mean Dame.
I don't do that.
You have to call him Dame.
You don't.
If you call him Damian Lillard, you're not cool, remember?
You can call
him
by his name, and you don't have to talk about how strong his shoe game is, though. But to me, the comps for him.
How is Dame's shoe game?
I'm sure it's very strong. The comps for him are guys like Gilbert Arenas, talking about Kobe White. Because you think of a point guard, that's all he's doing is sharing the ball. He can score the basketball.
He's bigger than Arenas.
Yes.
Arenas was 6'4". He's 6'5".
He's not quite as explosive a leaper and finisher around the rim, but he can shoot it, dude.
He also doesn't have Arenas' first step. I mean, we're picking nits on the comp now, but I kind of like it in that he can take you off the dribble. He's really, really long at the point guard position. We have a pair of tickets to see the Nationals' first Saturday home game of the season. That's a week from 2 days from now, 9 days out for 106.7 The Fan Day at the ballpark. If you want those tickets, you've got to be listening. Start of next segment. If you can answer a trivia question we've got for you as the 10th caller, you can win those tickets. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Here is your trivia question, Nationals fans, for your chance to win tickets. 106.7 The Fan Day at the ballpark is 9 days away, first Saturday of the season. You got to know the answer and be the 10th caller at 800-636-1067. Which National leads the team in home runs at spring training?
Oh, I don't know that.
One guy has hit four. Who is he?
I don't know who the answer is.
If you know the answer, you're the 10th caller at 800-636-1067. You're going to win those two tickets to watch your Nats take on the New York Mets for 106.7 The Fan Day at the park March 30th. The opportunity as well to be on the field for the starting tunnel experience prior to the game. 106.7 The Fan wants to take you out to the ball game with a specially priced ticket. Get your tickets today at thefandc.com/fanday. courtesy of the Nats. Details, thefandc.com/contest. We've done this day every year. Normally, it's late in the summer. Not this time. How about game number two of
right
the season?
Right out of the gate, huh?
Awesome. Really pumped about it. Have you seen any of the pictures coming out of the ballpark from Blue Shorts?
Yes.
TheFanDC.com's own. Scott Allen of the DC Sports Blog and others who are at the ballpark today getting the tour and basically the sampling of all the food that is new at Nationals Park.
Yeah.
I'm looking at what is going to be available in Section 136. Now, you and I have been very, very sad since we found out that Mike Isabella's G sandwich stand in Section, I think it was like 240.
I thought it was 136 down that first baseline. Down
you know what?
Right
it
field.
Was the lower level, so it's probably right there. You're right. Yeah. This might be the replacement. Medium Rare.
Oh, hello.
Which is a lovely place.
Just a delightful spot.
Is offering steak sandwiches with fries, and I don't know what kind of sauce that is. Looks almost like a gravy type sauce.
Mm.
Steak.
It's real au jus, Jerry.
On bread with fries and sauce. Going to be offered at Section 136 this year.
I'll have a steak sandwich, a Bloody Mary, and a steak sandwich, please.
District coolers, the alcoholic juice pouches, are back mm-hmm. this year. Specialty hot dogs, including the New York pastrami and Philly cheesesteak, will be available at the Taste of the Majors stands this season.
Taste of the Majors.
What do we think about the Philly cheesesteak Bryce Harper option?
I will, of course, not eat it out of protest, but it looks good, actually.
Don't let Bryce Harper ruin your eats.
Oh, it's ruined.
Good Eats with Alton Brown is not about who you're angry at. You know what I mean? The Oyster Po' Boy, fish and chips, fried shrimp at Hank's Oyster
yeah.
Bar stand
what
in
up?
Section 108. I didn't know Hank's had a stand now at Section
108.
Is that 108.
New? I think that's new, right?
Got to be. I have
close
not
to
seen
our
that.
Little home court in the red box in left field.
Anything else standing out to here? What are you thinking?
La Casita Pupería. Papusas, which are delicious.org. I am looking at those. They are made from the... applause breaks of angels. They're incredible. I'm excited about those.
So one other note I saw, and Blue Shorts, I think, posted a video about this, if you want to check it out on his Twitter account. The Nats fans who are in the ballpark that don't carry around cash, like me, I never have cash on me. A bunch of people in the stadium in the past have been walking around with your beers, your sodas, your waters. You could never get what you needed because they didn't take cards. They have way more vendors now accepting credit cards, payments with Apple Pay, Google Pay, that kind of thing, as well as some of the terminals around the ballpark where you're going to be able to do that. And they're also setting up an app where certain fans are going to be able to order things to their seats. So they're just trying to stay ahead of the curve technologically. I always give the Nats a lot of credit for that.
Apple Pay, Google Pay, Square terminals, the credit card, the whole nine yards. Yes, sir. Update it. Keep updating it. Keep improving the experience for your fans. Sounds like that's what they're doing.
Yesterday I said that the Caps had the best fan experience in D.C., and I really do believe that they do. I think a lot of it has to do with live hockey, the intensity. The pizzazz of last night's game was otherworldly, but the Nats do it right as well.
So
that's a good way to spend your day.
The Caps has the best, the Capitals rather, have the best. I go to the arena, I have the best time the most often. That's the one seed. I'll put, though, Foodstuffs, the Nationals ballpark experience over Capital One Arena for both the Wizards and Capitals. If you're talking food, give me Nats Park in a sprint away. I think they win. Like if I ran against Usain Bolt, fastest man on the earth, I think it's he's the Nationals food stuff, and I'm every other stadium in town trying to catch up to it.
Do you think that's a baseball thing? Because when we go over foods at stadiums, people name ballparks. When we get those lists every spring that come out right around now with look what's now available at fill-in-the-blank place. See what I'm saying?
I do.
It's not normally the indoor arenas, and it's no knock on Aramark or whoever does the food. I love a chicken tender basket with fries from Capital One Arena.
Sure you do.
But you don't have necessarily the same nuance, the same creativity, the same restaurants from outside. You got some of that stuff at the arenas, but I think ballparks major in that, whereas other sports minor in it. I don't know why that is.
Well, I don't either. One, ballparks, you're right, but two, the Nats Park has done yeoman's work with partnering with some of the local eateries. I mean, everything from Hank's Oyster Bar, we touched on, to Ben's Chili Bowl, to Hot Dogs and Fries, to a bunch of places that are D.C.'s own, are there now. Medium Rare is in there. What's stopping? I don't know the answer. So a smart adult could tell me. What stops Capital One Arena from doing that? Is something stopping them? I don't know the answer. Could they say, hey, Medium Rare, come make us a steak sandwich? I don't know.
I would think so. I mean, they have other types of deals with either restaurants. Like, yeah. Remember the Green Turtle used to have a little stand where they did their wings and things?
Rocklands is there in Capital One Arena, right? One of my favorite home court barbecue joints.
And I'm sure there's, like you said, people way above my pay grade strike these deals and get all this done.
Like a smart adult that has a salary.
Absolutely.
Does this. Yeah.
A real salary, too.
Yeah.
Like not like, like our kinds of
salaries.
No,
like a salary with like commas.
The
in
kind
it
of salaries that like help your whole family.
Yeah.
You know, you support
yeah.
other people, perhaps. The update for you on what's going on in the tournament right now. Minnesota leads Louisville 25-21. There is 3 minutes and 20 seconds of action still to play in the first half of that game. Minnesota going a little gold on gold for you, Dan. And Louisville wearing white on white. I'm okay with color juxtaposition when we got two teams wearing colors. I know a lot of people hate that.
I just don't want to be confused. I want to know who's who right away.
I want to know who's who, but I like an aesthetically pleasing game. I think we have that in the first of these tournament matchups. Elsewhere, we've got Yale, a 14 seed, and LSU, a 3 seed. And early on, the Tigers do not seem to be missing their head coach, Will Wade, as they're up 13-8 about 4.5 minutes into the game.
Yale didn't get a bucket until about 4 minutes into this game, so now it's closer. They looked a little bit overwhelmed. They've calmed down a little bit, hopefully more of a back-and-forth even kind of game. But LSU came out like gangbusters up, by, I believe it was 9-0.
It does have to be crazy, though, for some of these teams who have not played on any stage of consequence this year to suddenly be playing knowing the entire country is watching.
That I know, right?
Every TV in every sports bar and every analyst who's covered college basketball for 16 seconds now has eyeballs on you. I don't think you can just pretend like it's a normal game if you're
with
Yale.
All due respect, this isn't you playing Penn. You know what I mean? This is not the Cornell game. This is a different animal. And remember, Yale handled themselves pretty well a couple years ago, taking Duke to the wire in a game. I mean, it took everything that Duke had to overcome a very game Yale team. So you would like to think they're not scared. I mean, James Jones, their head coach, is now kind of a hot candidate to go more of a major to a major program. I'd love him at GW, by the way, for example. Right now, Yale's a better program than GW, but with more upside potentially. I'd love him to be the head coach there.
The big one at one is next. Jason LaConfora yesterday afternoon breaking the news that the Redskins are sniffing around on trading up for Dwayne Haskins, Ohio State's quarterback who threw 50 touchdowns this year. We'll have the Radio.com Sports Insider on the show live to discuss that rumor and some of the other goings-on in the NFL next on Grant and Danny live from the Sportsbook at the Hollywood Casino.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.